Welcome to the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about the songs we love and the stories behind them. I'm your host, Ryan Gregg.
If you were here, I assume that you, like me, love music and have an interest in hearing the stories behind some songs and artists and albums. And if you like those things, you're in the right place. So thank you for tuning in today. Hey, before we start the interview, I want to make sure to mention again the free bonus episode you can get of the podcast. The way that you can get that is by going to thesongsofnote.com/bonus. And when you go there, it's going to ask you for your email address. You enter that, and then you get an automated email from me with three things that you can download. The first is an unreleased episode of the podcast that is exclusive for people who sign up for my newsletter. Two, you get a download of the playlist that the episode is about, of 27 of my favorite songs of all time. And if you like music and if you like bands like I do, then getting recommendations about a cool song or maybe a song I haven't heard before, that's always one of my favorite things. So I'm hoping that there's some songs on here that you haven't heard and that you might think are cool like I do. And the third thing is there's a screensaver for your phone. So if you want to do that, you can do that. So it's three things. You go to www.thesongsofnote.com/bonus, and that's how you get that those free downloads. Today's episode is really awesome. I get to talk with Dwight Garner, who writes for the New York Times, and he wrote this really great article that I came across about Elvis Costello, and I just really enjoyed his writing enough that I reached out and was like, hey, would you be willing to talk about this Elvis's song Allison? And he graciously said yes. And so we're going to head on over to the interview. This is Dwight Garner. He is the book critic for the New York Times. You can follow him on Twitter at Dwight Garner. He's got a new book out called Garner's Quotations. I'm going to put as a link in the show notes. And this is our interview on Elvis Costello's song Allison. Hey, this is Ryan. I am so excited to have Dwight Garner here. Dwight, thanks so much for taking time to chat with me about Elvis Costello.
Hey, thanks for asking me.
You know, I came across your article in the New York Times about Costello's autobiography, and I really love trying to find guests who can talk about music. And it's fun to find people who talk about music in kind of a different way. And the thing that I really liked was you are obviously an awesome writer. You do it for a living. I love the way that you wrote about his biography. But you mentioned a couple things in your article that just made me even more interested in Costello. And it's part of the reason why I wanted to do this episode. I'm not like a diehard Elvis Costello fan. And in our interaction over the messaging, I think you even said I'm no expert. And that's part of the reason I wanted to talk to you, because I feel like, and here's my question. I feel like Elvis Costello can be seen as like a precious character or somebody that, like, I mean, obviously he's revered. He's incredible. Sometimes I think he can be somebody that it's easy to latch onto and take him to new heights of adoration. And I kind of just want to talk about him as somebody who I just like what he does, but I don't worship at the throne of Elvis Costello. Do you know what I mean? Do you ever pick that up as far as music?
I know exactly what you mean. You know, he's one of those people. He's so prolific. You know, he's released so many albums, and, you know, I followed his career. I mean, you know, of course, I was in 1977 when his first record came out. I was 12, and I remember that record sort of filtering out, but I didn't really become aware of it until I was 14 or 15, a little older. And the album of his that means the most to me is Imperial Bedroom, which came out in 1982. And, you know, they say about music that you always want to hear your entire life. The songs and the albums you heard when you were first starting to, like, make out in cars, when you're first being sexually active, that's music, supposedly, someone has said, you want to hear your entire life. And you know, weirdly, it's kind of true. I mean, you know, I think Imperial Bedroom is kind of a masterpiece, but also it's this album that was there for me in high school that I played 57,000 times on vinyl. And, you know, so we all have these kind of records that mean something for us that aren't necessarily the artist's best work. But, you know, Elvis Costello is such a word man, right? Like, so smart, these lyrics. And to review his book, you know, you kind of know, you knew he could write, but some rock people have pretty good lyrics, and yet their books aren't that good. And his book is really quite excellent.
You even, well, this is a sideshow, I'm going to come back, but you even mentioned Keith Richards' biography in the article. And I read that, and I love the Stones, and I really didn't like his biography very much at all. And that, I disagree with some of my friends on that. Some of them loved it, but it made me want to read Elvis Costello's biography based on your description there of how much you would sound like you enjoyed it a lot, right?
Yeah, I love the Elvis book. You know, it's even longer than the Keith Richards book. Right. It doesn't seem like it because Elvis he's crunchier than Keith, you know. Yeah. You know, it's a little bit, he's a little bit of a better writer, but I did like the Richards book, but I didn't love it. But
yeah,
the Elvis book, I mean, he's just got a way, you know, and, you know, as I wrote in my review, even Elvis's book, it should have been like 150 pages shorter, but
yeah.
You know, we'll take what we can get with Elvis.
There you go. So I love the fact that you experienced him when he came out, as far as like you were hearing this in real time. What do you think it is now, like looking back, like what are the things about Elvis Costello that you think people latch on about him? What do people love about him?
Well, you know, I remember hearing Allison for the first time, and you know, people weren't writing like that in 1977. You know, I think this is weird and embarrassing, but I think I may have first heard Allison on some made-for-TV after-school movie starring someone like Robbie Benson about a girl who has cancer, and he's like the boyfriend taking care of her. And you know, and somehow the music guys for the movie had good taste. And I remember hearing these lyrics, you know, and like, you know, you let some little friend of mine take off your party dress. You know, sometimes I wish I could stop you from talking when I hear the silly things you say. People weren't, I mean, this was really coming out on the radio and in this movie that I saw. Just these lines reached out and grabbed you by the shirt. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, this is something. And it kind of made you pay attention to this guy.
And I think that, like, for me, there's some kind of nerdy quality to him, or like Buddy Holly quality. I mean, maybe it's just the glasses, but there's something about him that seems like a little bit like the underdog, but I also want to be him. I don't know what that is. Do you
right?
Do you feel
that? Right. Yeah, it's true. One of the skinny guys with glasses, kind of a Woody Allen-ish kind of guy, in a sense, but more of a but coming from more of a punk aspect than Woody, but like the young skinny intellectual who secretly slays and gets the girls and puts the big guys in their place, you know, the jocks and the would-be legislators of the world. He kind of seizes command. He wrote in his memoir too. He always thinks that people found him to be angry, an angry young man, but he thinks it's because of his, like the gap in his teeth. He thinks that makes him look angrier than he actually is. So I mean, he did seem awesome. Kind of angry to me, but I get the whole gap tooth thing.
You know? That's good. That's good. Let's see. I want to quote you from your article. You said that the writing is streaked with some of the best writing, funny, strange, spiteful, anguished we've ever had from an important musician. One, that's unsurprising knowing the level of his writing talents and skill. But why do you think we expect less from rock bios? I don't know. I feel like he obviously knocks it out of the park here. And then why do we expect less from other people? Because often they're often a disappointment, or they can be. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, no one used to give about rock bios. You know, they used to be kind of these hackneyed products that would come out with a ghostwriter, and your expectations were minimal. I mean, if you love the artist, you might love the book just because you love the artist. But ever since Keith Richards, and I would say the Springsteen book, which was so much better, I think it was so good. I mean, he just knocked it out of the park, and the Patti Smith book, and the standard has risen for rock biographies now, and Elvis has helped bring that about. But you know, rock. I mean, lyric writers are poets in their way, and there are many poets who can't write prose that well. You know, sometimes you read a poet's memoir or a poet's novel, and you realize that, well, you know, poetry is their thing. I mean, it's short, sharp expression.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's possible that Elvis could have been that kind of writer, and his memoir might have not been very good, you know? I mean, I've read a lot of rock memoirs. As a matter of fact, I was just reading one today. I'm not going to review. I shouldn't say who it is. I'm going to say who it is. It's the new Ricky Lee Jones memoir, which is coming out in like 2 weeks. And I really love Ricky Lee Jones, you know, and I still do. And I just don't like her memoir. It's a little loopy. It's kind of self-involved. It doesn't reach out of itself and talk about the world at large very well. Anyway, a lot of things were wrong with it, but I had great hopes for it. And that's true with a lot of rock memoirs. She's a wonderful lyric writer, but her voice doesn't translate very well onto the page.
We're kind of derailing here a little bit, but I kind of like it. You mentioned Springsteen and Patti Smith, a couple others. Do you have any other like favorite? What are your top couple rock bios? Any come to mind?
Oh man, I just listed a bunch of them. I like the how do you pronounce her name? Pamela Desbarres. Is it Desbarres or Desbarres?
I don't know.
She was married to Michael Desbarres, who was kind of a flamboyant Whitesnake sort of rock singer. He was not in Whitesnake, but he sort of looks like some caricature rock star. But anyway, Pamela Desbarres was a famous groupie, and arguably, I think, one of the inspirations for the character in the Cameron Crowe movie, Almost Famous, for the groupie in that movie. And she wrote a memoir called I'm With the Band.
I haven't read that.
It's sort of sweet and fond and yet particular and funny. And so I've always really liked that book. But I don't know, you know, some rock bios have been ghostwritten and are still pretty good. One I'm thinking of now is the Greg Allman. The Greg Allman bio, excuse me, autobio, with he wrote, there's some, I'm kind of blank on this guy's name now, but there's a well-known, and he's good, writer who ghostwrites just a ton of rock memoirs. He did the Franklin's, I almost had his name, I can't remember it now, but I believe Alan Light did Greg Allman's, the rock journalist Alan Light did Greg Allman's, and it was good. I don't know. Do you have favorites?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you mentioned Springsteen. You kind of like lit a part of my brain up I wasn't thinking about. Like, I remember reading that. It's not even that old, right? I mean, Born to Run is the one that you're talking about, right? That's the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a couple of years ago I read it. And one, I was moved completely by his like humanity coming through, that he didn't come across like a rock star in the overly pretentious. And I thought he certainly could have. He certainly had the reason to. He had all the accolades to be able to do that. And he didn't come across like that. He talked about the thing that struck home most for me was talking about trying to reconnect with his kids after he'd been like on the road. And he talks about the thing that helped him reconnect with his kids was making pancakes. Making pancakes in the morning was going to be his thing. And he just decided it. And how the next morning he got up early and his kids came in and he's like, there's pancakes. And that was their thing. And I was like, for whatever reason, that really moved me. I got up the next morning. I got up early. I made my kids pancakes. I was like, you know what? Bruce did it. And I love it. And that was kind of a fun thing. But I love that one. I love the Billie Holiday biography or autobiography. Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't read that forever, but yeah, I do like that book.
And then, two others come to mind, the Charles R. Cross, bio on Kurt Cobain, Heavier Than Heaven, and who came on the show a couple months ago. That was fun. And then also my favorite singer songwriter is Elliot Smith, and had William Todd Schultz was the author of that. His book, about Elliot Smith, Torment Saint was the name of that one. Sorry, I blinked for a second. Anyway, okay. those are some of my very, very favorites. But so Elvis, I want to go back to Elvis because I've derailed us. But this song, Allison, was the one we're kind of talking about. And when you hear the song, it does not sound like a ballad, but it is a ballad. I mean, if you had to classify it, it's almost like a pop punk slow song, but it doesn't come across as a ballad. But Linda Ronstadt covered it. And totally makes it a quote ballad in my mind. And you may disagree with my description there, but how do you think his song, his version of Allison, differs from a typical, typical ballad from what you would expect?
Well, I think you're right, but I think it is a ballad. But I think there's something about Elvis's delivery. Mm. He's got this snarling kind of knife in the back of a chair, scratching out, you know, kind of quality that, you know, like so many of Tom Waits' songs, for example, which I think can be compared to the song in a weird way. I mean, Tom Waits, a lot of his lyrics are really kind of sappy, you know, and he gets away with them because he has that monster weird sound, you know, and he has that voice, and he can make a sort of cheap song sound really soulful and real. And not that this Allison is not a cheap song. I mean,
right.
It is like 6 or 7 points in it are just like brilliant lyric writing. But it's partly Elvis's delivery. I mean, he's got a slightly snotty outsider, and there's some key lines in there. And you don't get, I mean, in a ballad, you don't get a line like, I wish you would shut up because you say stupid things. I mean, it's not
true.
A typical ballad line.
That's
so,
a good point.
You know, so part of the reason this song works is that it's kind of a push-pull. It's the poet Edward Seidel, who's one of my favorite poets, said his favorite kind of thing to read or listen to is something like, what was the line? Something like, a lovely voice telling me unlovely things, you know, or like this is kind of a ballad. It's a lovely ballad that tells you unlovely. It's, you know, it's kind of flipping the switch. It seems like it's a, you know, and it, you know, this song actually gets darker than people think it does. I mean, near the end of the song, Elvis says, "I think somebody better put out the big light." You know, I mean, which to me is an obvious suicide reference in, this somewhat simple ballad.
Yeah.
You know? He can't stand to see her with another man.
Right.
So it doesn't seem to me like he's going to kill somebody. He's going to kill himself. So it's a, you know, there's darkness in this ostensible ballad.
You know, there's so much in what you just said, especially about like his take on it and just in his tone. And it comes across as so vulnerable, and so it's just so unique to him. Like, there's very few singers that come to mind where you can hear like a note or two, and you're like, that's that guy. And I think that he conveys so much in this that is subtle and intelligent. And like you said, these lines that aren't obvious, he's not saying these obvious things, but he's alluding to them, and he's doing it in an intelligent way. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think we're...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I think it was David Byrne who said, you know, the prettier a singer's voice is, the less you believe what they say.
That's,
you know,
a great
and
quote.
Elvis's voice.
Gosh.
Elvis's voice is so unpretty that you kind of are right there with him, you know?
Yeah. Huh. That rings so true for me. Like, there's so many bands and or artists that I love that maybe aren't typically, you know, not classic, but whatever. They sound a little different, and that's why I like them. And I can certainly see why Elvis Costello would resonate in that way. It's funny. I posted just to try to get like a little feedback before this interview in an Elvis Costello fan group. And I was like, you know, what do you like about Allison? And I was like, is it the sincerity in his voice? Like, what is it? And, you know, one of the first comments was, nobody, like, the real fans are over that song. The real fans are into the Detectives and, you know, other great songs. What is it about bands that have, because, I mean, this is his most popular song, at least on iTunes. It's his not defining song. But what do you think it is about bands that have a hard time latching on to, what's the question? The question is, why is it hard for fans to accept it when a big song comes along from their band, but they don't attach themselves to it? They are attached to the deeper songs, the deeper cuts, and they almost are repelled by the big hits. Do you know what I'm saying there?
Oh, absolutely. We all hate it when we think we've latched onto a personal private thing, and then here come all the amateurs.
Yeah,
you know, when the hit comes out,
totally.
You know, I mean, you know, so I totally get that. And, you know, I hate to admit it, but I'm the kind of listener who, you know, I listen to all kinds of music and whatever, but I'm definitely guilty of being the guy who searches for the one ballad out of the hard rocker's entire catalog to latch onto, you know, like I'll secretly go and pull the ballad off, you know, and, you know, I guess it makes me a wuss, but so what? I love it. You know, I love it when like really, really sort of out there bands, really sort of raunchy and hardcore, like put their one ballad out. And usually it's like a great ballad because they're not just working in that genre very often, you know?
Right.
And Elvis, you know, did not write a lot of love songs early on. And even we're talking about Allison. I mean, he says, "I don't want to be another sticky Valentine," you know, and he's not.
Huh. That's good. That makes me think of the Replacements as a band I really like. They have a song called Androgynous. Yep. I don't know if you know that song, but they're
absolutely,
you know, that's such a good song. They're not known for being that kind of band, but I like them so much more because they're willing to go there and do this piano song that totally fits them. I think it's
right,
the mark of a great band to be able to do both, right?
Right. And here comes a regular as kind of a ballad, you know, or it's a slow,
that's a good one.
You know,
that's true.
From theirs. And anyway, but yeah. They could do it all.
Oh, agreed. What else about his biography? What things come to mind? Anything come to, like, stories from it that kind of stuck out and you're like, oh, I didn't know that about him, or that surprised me about him?
Oh, interesting. I mean, he was pretty open about all the girls, you know. I mean, the funny thing about rock memoirs is that they often, like, allied, you know, they lead aside, you know, a lot of stuff that he would rather not people know about them, you know. And you know, Elvis clearly has had at many times in his life women dropping out of trees into his cars, you know, and so to speak. And yeah, you know, he's pretty honest about, you know, women in this book. And there's some kind of wild stories and some regrets about that. He is good about his childhood. You know, his father was a musician as well.
Yeah, I read that.
you know, and just growing up in this environment, he evokes. I mean, you know, one small way to judge a memoir, and Springsteen is good at this, and so is Elvis, is how much care a writer takes in writing about other people. You know, are they really noticers? Do they know? I mean, like Springsteen, like describes, just to take the girlfriend example, one or two girlfriends of his growing up on the shore in New Jersey are just so well described by Springsteen. He just remembers them and can sum them right to your mind what this person is like to be with, you know. And a lot of memoirs, rock or otherwise, there's none of that. I mean, the person is so self-absorbed, me, I.
Right.
And so for me to read a writer, especially in a memoir, getting out of him or herself, and Elvis is pretty good at that. There are a lot of characters, whether they're producers or other musicians, or a lot of real people in his memoir. And, you know, one example of Elvis Costello's good writing is a Springsteen line. You know, he writes that Bruce Springsteen, quote, laughed like steam escaping from a radiator, you know, which is a good description of how Springsteen laughs. You know?
That's great.
So anyway,
that's awesome. One of the quotes from the book that I really liked was, and this was in your article, songs can be many things, an education, a seduction, some solace and heartache, a vow for anger, a passport you're undoing, or even a lottery ticket. It's just, there's so much packed into that statement. What do you think he means with that? I mean, there's so many things, but I loved it. I wrote it down. I was like, that's such a good quote.
It is a great quote. It's like something great, some great critic would write, like Grill Marcus or someone. There's just so many angles to it. You know, but it takes sentences like that. I mean, I don't know, maybe for some writers, that kind of sentence can just pop out of your mouth or out of your MacBook Air. But it seems like this is a book he worked on. You know, that kind of sentence takes some refining to make it that good. And right. It just speaks to me of a writer who cared about his book. You know, sentences like that do not appear in many memoirs by rock stars.
I think maybe that's why it stuck out. I was like, whoa, that is very self-aware. I really like how you described how he observed other people, because I think that the easiest things for rock stars to be is narcissistic and to be so self-absorbed, like you said, that you don't notice what's going on around you. And that's certainly been my, you know, impression from the ones that I've read. And when all they can talk about is themselves, I've never thought of it as a way to judge someone's, what did you say, empathy, or to be able to tell their skills of observation, to notice
it's
those around them.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Right. It doesn't always matter, but it can, though. You know, it's just one way of telling how observant, you know, a person is, you know. And Elvis does. And, you know, his family life as well. I mean, you know, this book is an investment of time. I mean, it's not just, you don't sit down with this and read it on a plane flight. You know, you're going to be flying to Australia and back to finish this book. But it's mostly worth it.
That's good. So as somebody who has listened to him for a long time, and we've obviously talked about Bruce Springsteen, and I assume that you maybe like somebody like Tom Petty, possibly. How do you think he lines up? Like, how do you think Elvis Costello lands in the world, in the comparison to like Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen?
That's brutal. I mean, you know, I mean, Tom Petty songs all have like MSG sprinkled on them. You know, the second you taste them, it's like, you know, this is like great shiny. Like, who writes songs this well that just blast out of your radio? You know? But Tom Petty is a very good songwriter, but he doesn't really crawl inside my brain the way Elvis does, you know, in terms of just the sheer lyrical genius. Mm. And, you know, Springsteen had the lyrics. I mean, they've gotten less complex as he's gotten older. Mm. But, you know, there are a lot of wordy guys out there who didn't have Springsteen's ability, because Springsteen played in all these bar bands, just to like blow the world backwards with the force of his performance, along with the lyrics. That combination is rare. And Elvis has a bit of that. He had a good band, or he still does, with The Attraction.
Yeah.
And they were good live. You know, I've seen them a couple times.
Oh,
and,
did you really?
They're bad live sometimes too. Yeah, I've seen them here and there, you know, I mean, for sakes. I mean, I'm in my mid fifties. My entire life he's been around. I mean, I've seen him once a decade, maybe.
Nice.
But you know, some of his early shows were pretty rowdy, and he had a real band, and he has a stage presence of a sort. And, you know, he's not just a singer songwriter type who, you know, writes complex songs and draws them out on his guitars. You know, a lot of singer songwriters who are very good just kind of write these autumnal songs about their own personal lives. And you don't get the sense that Elvis writes that much about his own life. I mean, he does to a degree, but he's really out there trying on different personas and different voices and seeing the world in really unique ways.
Well, you mentioned seeing them good and bad. What do you remember? One thing that made the shows good and one thing that made them bad, when you said you've seen both?
Well, I saw one of the early tours. It may have even been, was it Imperial? I saw him in the early 80s in Florida. And he was great. He was pretty on, and his band was tight. And then I saw him, and he was doing this tour for a while where he would spin this big wheel. Remember the Song Wheel tours? He had this big wheel, which always kind of like what's the game show where they spin the wheel with
Wheel of Fortune or something?
Wheel of Fortune. There you go. So it's kind of like Wheel of Fortune. He'd spin the wheel and a song would come up. And I don't know, that kind of concert doesn't really appeal to me. I like to think that the artist has sort of sequenced their songs and knows what they want to get out of the night. And, you know, like one of my dreams is to have someone like Springsteen or someone like Elvis Costello ask me to like program, like, Dwight, what should I play tonight? Yeah. And let me make the song, you know, because I have so many ideas. Like, this song should go into that song, and that song should go into this song. And, you know, that's sort of my dream. You know, and actually, I read some actor, Edward Norton, was allowed to do that one night for Springsteen. I think they met. I'm pretty sure. You'd have to Google this, but I'm pretty sure. But no, wait, who is the guy who was on 25th Hour, the Spike Lee movie?
Yeah, it is Edward Norton.
So I'm almost certain he got to program a Springsteen set one night.
Oh, man.
Which is, you know,
incredible.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad thing to do.
Now, the spinning a wheel thing, that's funny because the only time I've ever seen it was one time at a show for an indie singer-songwriter named Sufjan Stevens. I don't know if you know him, sure. But he did a Christmas tour. And so we went to the Christmas show, and the whole thing, it was the most fun concert I've ever been to. And I didn't know what to expect. I love his music, but it's usually so serious for the most part, or fun, you know, some fun, but it was the most fun show ever. Like, he and the whole band are dressed up the entire time. They have a wheel on the side of the room that's as tall, like it's like 12, 15 feet high, giant wheel with all their Christmas songs. And there's an elf, like somebody dressed up as Santa's helper, spins the wheel, and then it's like, we wish you a Merry Christmas. And then, you know, he, like, the place goes nuts, and then everybody starts singing and sing along. Anyway, didn't expect to talk about that, but it was the most fun concert I've ever been to. But I think it was because it was Christmas, and it was not in the,
I can see
what you're saying is that I can see how that would have been frustrating, possibly, or not as enjoyable. Maybe.
I get it. Yeah. You know, that does make sense to me. I don't know. Maybe this wasn't the best night of the tour. I know people who like the spinning wheel tour, so I may have just seen an off night, or I just, maybe it didn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Springsteen does a lot of shows like that. I mean, not with a wheel, but he takes a million crowd requests. You know, people write the songs on posters, and he plucks them out of the crowd. And I don't like that either. I'm not sure what it is about it. I like to think that the artist, I want him to come on stage knowing what he wants to do. And I want
him
to blow me down with what's in his mind, not what's in my mind.
Yeah.
I
think for me, like, I've always latched on to Pearl Jam. I mean, I've done several episodes on them, but like, I love that they change their set list every night, and that Eddie Vedder goes and, you know, makes a different set list, and that, you know, he's writing it out, changing it up. I can't imagine being in those bands or as a backing band, and you're like with Springsteen or even probably Dave Matthews, people like that, where the lead guy is like, hey, we're doing this song. And I'd be thinking, we haven't played that in 8 years. What do you mean we're doing?
I know.
You know, but you've got to be on to be able to perform that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you play, I mean, what, Springsteen's been around, going on 50 years now.
Gosh.
I guess if you've just done it for that long, you know.
You know how to do it. You know, you'd have to know how to do it. So you mentioned lyrics. I want to ask you about Elvis lyrics. Like, do you have any of his other songs that come to mind that you're like, oh, that is my favorite Elvis Costello lyric-based song or anything like that?
Well, I do have a slight, I mean, you know, I remember when I talked earlier about Imperial Bedroom, which is my favorite Elvis Costello album, which came out in 1982. And in some weird way, it helps make me want to be a writer of some variety, because the album came out, and the sleeve that the record was in, I think it was Elvis's fifth or sixth record, and previous records did not have lyric sheets, and I love lyric sheets, you know.
Yes.
Because your kids these days, not knowing records, you know, lyric sheets are the same.
They're missing out.
I used to sit there and put the album on and pour over the lyrics. And the lyrics on Imperial Bedroom were printed, like, for the first time in any of his albums, all over the vinyl sleeve. And they were unpunctuated. They were all lowercase, kind of typed and kind of all over the place. But even the songs weren't specified. They all just ran into each other. So it was like this long mass of prose, but they were in order. So you could could follow one song into the next, but it was just like a page full of type, and every song was on there, and something about it was beautiful and inspiring. And a lot of these songs on that album mean a lot to me. You know, Boy with a Problem, and Beyond Belief, and Tears Before Bedtime, and Long Honeymoon, Man Out of Time. I think it's just a great record. But you know, having said that, I mean, God, you put on Elvis Costello's greatest hits, and every one of them is a you know, is a well-written song for the most part.
That's true.
I don't know. What are some of yours?
I mean, gosh, I'm probably more of the hits with him. That was part of my hope in doing this episode was kind of, you know, I want to look into him more. I want to explore it more. But I mean, gosh, Allison's not my favorite, but I really like he did a record with the Roots. Like, was it a year or two ago? Wise Up Ghost. He had a really cool song, right? Walk Us Uptown. I really like that one. I really like, what was it? Detective song, Radio is fun. Beyond Belief.
I love Veronica. I love Every Day I Write the Book. I've always liked. You know, he almost overdoes it. I mean, you know, the Roots record, the one he did with Alan Toussaint in New Orleans. His Burt Bacharach record. There's so much Elvis out there that you can spend your entire life just listening to Elvis Costello. And you know, he's great, but I've just fallen way behind. He has a brand new record out now. The title seems to be, I'm not going to get it wrong, but it seems to be in a foreign language. Huh. The title looks like it's in French or something. I keep seeing it on my Spotify. I mean to listen to it, but you know, I'm like eight albums behind on him. So yeah. Where to start?
Well, gosh, I didn't know he had a new one out. I'm going to go listen to that as well. Okay, last question. Since you're a word guy, you're obviously a lyric guy. We've talked on the show before about how, like, a great rock. Now, this rock doesn't so much apply to Elvis, totally, but kind of, because he's still band based. Mm-hmm. What makes a great rock lyric? Because, like, when you hear like Jim Morrison singing "Come On Baby, Light My Fire," that's not, you know, going to be revelatory as far as moving your world. But a lot of times, rock singers can sing things that are very basic, and when you read the lyrics, they don't have the power. But when you hear the lyrics, there's power there. There's some kind of transcendent thing, and that's part of the music aspect that I just love. That when I read a lyric, if I read a lyric first, I'm underwhelmed usually, and if I hear a lyric, I can be really moved by it. What do you think makes for a great lyric, whether in rock or from somebody like Elvis Costello?
Well, I'm going to say two things. One, the first thing I'm going to say has no relation to that question, but I wanted to remind listeners that in my mind, the best version of Allison appears, you can get it online. It's Elvis occasionally did those Neil Young benefits for the Bridge School.
Yeah,
have you heard those albums at all?
He
does a version of Allison that Neil Young comes in on at the end. And,
I haven't heard that.
It's a very powerful and moving acoustic version of the song that I think is one of the best. It's one I've played, you know, around my house and for my kids for the past 10 or 15 years. And it's the one I like
love
the best
it.
Now.
Love
go ahead.
No, I said, love it. I'll put a link to that in the show notes because I know I've watched those Bridge School benefits before. So I'll put a link to the YouTube clip of that, at least in the show notes. All right, keep going.
Yeah. I mean, you said it all already about song lyrics. I mean, you know, the amazing potency of who said it? Dennis Potter, I think the British playwright, or maybe it was Cole Porter. You know, the incredible potency of cheap music. I mean, you know, a song that the lyrics are fairly simple can just slay us, you know, and sometimes the well-written song doesn't do a thing for us if it doesn't work musically or if it, you know, the lyrics and the music don't work together. Elvis is one of those guys that lightning has struck more often than most people because he can actually write music as well as, I mean, although he says in his book that he can't read music, he says that he directs his band with, like, I don't know, like with threats and with hand signals or something. So in
that's
terms of telling the band how to play.
That's great.
So he can't, I don't think he actually reads music, but he clearly can write music in his head and apply it to his lyrics. He has both things going for him.
Yeah.
And it's a real rarity. It's the rare person who can write and perform and sing and do the music and the whole, he's got the whole package, you know? And, and you know, he's done arguably written too much music in his life, but you can start pulling out the best stuff and you still have a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good Elvis Costello stuff out there, and you know, and he's worth the time.
Awesome. Well, man, Dwight, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about Elvis Costello and just going into this song a little bit. I encourage people to go check him out and listen to some of these songs we've talked about. I'll put a link to Dwight's Twitter and as well a link to his new book, Garner's Quotations. And just really appreciate your time today. Dwight, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Well, it was really fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Songs of Note podcast. Be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.